Well, first of all, it's a common saying in the industry that, at this point in a cycle, the easy money's been made, but the big money is ahead. The easy money was made because, we held on to these things in a bear market, and when the tide started to turn, we were seeing doubles and triples and 5x, basically for doing nothing, just holding on, but typically, in a bull market like this, the big money is still ahead. So, absolutely, I agree with Rick on that. And I'm personally positioning myself for that. So, as far as what's hated, I mean, gold and silver have had a big correction. They're slightly ignored right now by the mainstream and Wall Street, especially the equities. They've not come into the gold and silver equities at all. Uranium and copper are unique. They're kind of similar because they both have supply-demand issues, they have political support, and they're backed by environmentalists for the most part.
Good day, everybody. It's your host, Just Steve Yang, here with Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And today I'm thrilled to have Jeff Clark, founder of thegoldadvisor.com, with me. Jeff, it's great to have you. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me. And boy, there's a lot to talk about right now in this market, huh?
Yeah, there is. Jeff, can you tell my audience a little bit about thegoldadvisor.com? I know you're the founder, but what is that all about? Why did you start that, and how do people find you guys?
Well, yeah, everything's under thegoldadvisor.com, everything we do. But, going back to the beginning, my dad was actually a gold prospector for over 20 years. He didn't work for a public company. He worked for on his own with a bunch of guys, made a couple discoveries, nothing earth-shattering. His best piece, though, was this giant 5-pound piece of bright white quartz with literally 3.5 ounces of gold weaving through it. It was a
Oh.
stunning piece, and he actually found that, dug it out of the ground. It was amazing. So he eventually broke it down into jewelry and all that. But and then I went to work for Doug Casey's firm, if people are familiar with that name.
Yeah,
Yeah,
we
I
love
worked
Doug
there.
Casey here.
Yeah, sure. And worked for other multiple bullion dealers, newsletters, started the Gold Advisor in the middle of COVID. But it's actually been frankly wonderful. I love what I do, and I hope it shows with everyone there. So
Well, love it. Jeff, we do have a lot to talk about, and I kind of want to know where you think we are in the commodity super cycle. Are we in a certain inning? Would you say we're in the beginning, the end, towards the middle?
That's a great question, Stephen. I actually charted how long past gold bull markets have lasted, if we could talk about just gold specifically.
Yeah.
The average is about 4 years. We're 2 years in as I measure it. There have been plenty longer cycles. So I don't think the bull market is over by any stretch of the imagination for a number of reasons. Now, when you talk about commodities in general, though, those are typically much bigger cycles. And gold would tag along with that, even if its bull market has technically ended. But the commodity super cycle, I mean, we're probably in the beginning stages of one right now. I don't know what inning, but I can tell you I am doing everything I can to capitalize on that, because I do think the commodity super cycle is going to be something that's big and long.
So you think we have like another decade to go, or are you looking at a couple of years?
At least a couple years for gold and silver, probably longer, given the conditions that we're in. Think about it. As much as gold has risen, yeah, I mean, we're in a correction now, but as much as it's risen over the past couple years, we still have not dealt with any of the debt issues, the deficit issues. We haven't seen a recession here in a while now. Is there going to be more money printing? And probably the biggie is, how do these fiat currencies resolve? Because for the first time in recorded history, all currencies in the world right now are fiat. What happens there? That means things get diluted, probably very bad, and then things get even more ugly when we try to get through that. So when you think about all of that, Steve, I'm forced to remain long gold. I have to continue to own gold. And for anyone who doesn't have at least 5% of their holdings in gold, anything less than that's not going to really do much for you. You should be buying. Gold's on sale right now. So all of that is ahead. All these other factors are more short term. So in the big picture, I see a much bigger bull market and gains in the stocks, by the way. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But big gains both in gold and gold stocks, and then especially the commodity super cycle.
Jeff, what's your philosophy on bullion versus stocks? Do you like the majors? Do you like the juniors? Do you like ETFs? What's your kind of gold play?
Bullion and gold stocks are completely different beasts. They're completely different entities. They're completely different investments. Gold is actually more of money than it is an investment. That's your hedge. That's your form of money. That's your defense against, money printing, de-dollarization, fiat currency dilution, et cetera, et cetera, right? That's something you probably want to hold in physical form. That's your defense. Your offense is when you go into the stocks, and those are more risky. If you buy a gold stock, let's say you buy Agnico Eagle, great company, well run, strong stock, but you don't own any of the gold. You only own shares in a company that's trying to produce a profit versus bullion in physical form that you have readily at your disposal that you can use in a crisis, whether it's a personal crisis or a large economic crisis. So those are two different entities. I own both. I want defense and offense. That's how every football team and baseball team plays, right? So, or we should say every basketball team since the NBA finals are on right now. So, but you get the point. You need to own both. You want to have exposure to both.
So we talk about the offense, the defense, the football analogy, well, offense and defense. I mean, if you got your payroll in too much of one versus the other, it becomes lopsided. You talked about gold. You want like 5% in gold at least. Is there a certain percentage that's too much gold, or a certain percentage that's too much juniors? What do you think is the fine line there?
That's a great question. There was actually a long-term study done, and they updated every year, going all the way back to the 1960s, on what is the ideal ratio between how much gold you should own in terms of risk reward, right? Too much gold, you don't have much, you have less reward. Too little gold, you have way too much risk. So what's the balance there? Well, this study from over 50 years says the ideal ratio is 20% in physical gold. Now, that does not include stocks. That's just physical. So 20% of your portfolio is in a defensive posture. And by the way, I think your audience probably knows gold has outperformed the 60/40 portfolio. It's outperformed bonds. And so the 60/40 portfolio kind of has failed us here since COVID. Gold is not. So you want to have 20% in gold, or at least try to get toward that goal. You want enough, hedge. You don't want enough financial protection so that you're prepared for any crisis, whatever it may be. And if there ends up being no crisis, I don't think that's likely. But if it's true, then you've lost nothing. You still have your defense in place, and you have your offense with the rest of your portfolio.
Jeff, I do want to ask you a little bit about some gold stocks, some other mining stocks. But before we get there, are you more bullish on gold or silver right now?
Well, I'm bullish on both. Absolutely. I think there's another up cycle coming in the precious metals sector. So I'm, prepared for that. I own both gold and silver. I own both gold and silver stocks. Now, that said, As you and I talk, the gold silver ratio is 66, I believe, something like that, which implies it's just the gold price divided by the silver price, as your audience knows. But the higher that ratio, the more silver is undervalued. The lower that ratio, the more it's overvalued. It's 66 now, I believe, as you and I talk. The average is 55. If you go back to the 1970s, the average is 50. So that shows that despite the moves we've had, silver is still undervalued relative to the gold price and has more potential upside. I think everyone knows that silver is a much smaller market, so it doesn't take as much money to move it. And before a bull market ends, silver has historically outperformed gold. So there's a lot of potential there, especially when you consider, the ratio fell to 35 in 2011, it fell to 20 and below in 1980. So there's a lot of potential there for silver. So if someone doesn't have enough, have much physical silver, I think it's a pretty good buy right now, especially with the big correction that's gone on. You can get it on sale, we tend to look more at the equities themselves, in with both those metals.
I spoke with Rick Rule earlier this week, and in terms of you mentioned sale, I asked him, is there any more easy money to be found? And he thinks that in terms of natural resources, while the easy money is pretty much gone, there's plenty of opportunity. Would you agree with that? Do you still see an asymmetrical setup, the risk reward, when it comes to copper, uranium, silver, or anything that you really like right now? And the other thing about Rick Rule is that, he loves what's hated. Is there anything where you feel that people are misreading here?
Well, first of all, it's a common saying in the industry that, at this point in a cycle, the easy money's been made, but the big money is ahead. The easy money was made because, we held on to these things in a bear market. And when the tide started to turn, we were seeing doubles and triples and 5x, basically for doing nothing, just holding on, But typically, in a bull market like this, the big money is still ahead. So, absolutely, I agree with Rick on that. And I'm personally positioning myself for that. So, as far as what's hated, I mean, gold and silver have had a big correction. They're slightly ignored right now by the mainstream and Wall Street, especially the equities. They've not come into the gold and silver equities at all. Uranium and copper are unique. They're kind of similar because they both have supply-demand issues. They have political support, and they're backed by environmentalists for the most part. So they have a lot of tailwinds behind them to help them. So I am definitely invested in copper and uranium. Lithium's been ignored. However, it has had a nice little bounce here so far this year. It had a little correction recently, but lithium's one you might want to look at because that, the demand for lithium is not going away. And if you say, well, EV sales are down, that may be true, but keep in mind that just as much and sometimes more lithium is used in a hybrid vehicle than it is in an EV. So that demand is not going away, and that's a market we want to take advantage of. We do have a lithium stock in our paid newsletter. So that's one I want to pay attention to and watch.
Again, Jeff, we will get to some picks of yours for some mining stocks, but I do want to ask you a question I asked Rick about juniors. A lot of these mines that people go after, they're not going to be around. They're not going to have a successful mine. The probability of success is low. And yet people like Rick Rule have made a crap load of money. So what is your viewpoint on how people should view juniors? Do you look for a certain batting average? What's your philosophy on that?
So first of all, you have to own a basket of these things. No one in the industry, even the best stock picker, if you think it's Rick Rohr or somebody else, nobody's going to bat 1,000. Nobody's even going to bat 500 when it comes to juniors, okay? So you must own a basket and you must focus on, best of best. That means the people behind it, the, pearl mining jurisdiction, a project that's big and rich, like my grandma's chocolate chip cookies. But for me, it's one question. And I have this in my book. And Rick Rule, by the way, is in my book as well. I have 17 people I interviewed for it. All the Rick Rules of the world, all the
Is
way down to.
Doug Casey one of
No, Doug didn't make it. He should have, but he's kind of semi-retired now, and he's living down in South America. So, but there's lots of good advice in there from other people as well as the
Yeah.
method I use. But the number one question when you're investing in an explorer and a junior is very simple. Will this project someday be an economic mine? That's it. You are investing in juniors for that distinct possibility and nothing else. Now, there's a lot of factors that can help you determine that answer. But if you determine or others determine that this is not likely to be a mine someday, you got to sell it. I mean, that's the whole basis of our investment, right? If you do think this is something, in your judgment or the judgment of other newsletter writers, that this could be or will be an economic mine at some point, hold on to that tiger by the tail, especially in a bull market, because they're going to become a target. They're either going to develop it themselves, or they're going to be bought out. Either scenario is very positive for the stock. So that's the number one question you have to think of when you're considering investing in any junior.
So, Jeff, Michael Gentile, I think, would say that the best odds of finding a mine is next to another one. How much more complicated is it than that? And just because it's near one doesn't mean it's going to succeed. So, what else do you look at to help you determine the qu answer to that question?
Well, you're referring to a brownfields project, which simply means there's probably more gold beside where the gold has already been discovered or is being mined, right? That's a brownfields project. A lot of producers will conduct exploration around their existing mine on their property to hopefully find more gold. And sometimes they, maybe even usually they do. Because you're right, the best place to find gold is right beside where it's been found before. That's a true adage in the industry. The opposite of that is what's called a greenfields project, where there's no known gold or discovery or anything in that area. Now, that increases your risk dramatically. But if those hit, those things can go crazy. A good example, my favorite example, is Snowline Gold. I recommended it, oh, I don't remember, 16 cents or something like that. And you can look at the price now, but it's, last I looked, we were close to 40x on it. That was a greenfields discovery of a real deposit that is big and, despite not having any infrastructure, is probably going to be bought out and become a mine someday. So those are your risk reward ratios. I like to look at four categories, to be frank. One is pre-discovery. That would be something like what Snowline was back then. I like to look at companies that they don't have a resource yet, but they have a discovery and they're building and drilling toward a resource. And the market may be pricing some of that in, but until that resource comes out, we don't really fully know. So there's a little risk there. But if you're really focused on strong companies that look like they're going to have an economic mine, that can be a very good bet. And then the third category is a company with a resource, but it's going to grow that resource significantly. And I don't mean by 10 or 20%. I mean a double or triple in that resource. I like, that category of stock. And those are lower risk too, by the way, because they already have a resource. They're backed by already, identifiable gold in the ground, And then the last category, which I also love, is the pre-producer. So this is a company that's gone all the way through development, the permitting and all that jazz, and they've made a construction decision. From a construction decision to first pour, research shows you have a 90% chance of a 90% return in about 18 months. That's very unusual to get in any investment, but especially in the junior mining industry. I love that category. And not every single stock that's in a pre-producing stage is going to be a winner. You still have to focus on the strongest. But I love that category because of the certainty it brings. In fact, there's a good example of a stock that I recommended publicly before I started the Gold Advisor. And it just sat there and sat there. It was a pre-producer. They made a construction decision. And for about a year, it went nowhere. But the 6 months leading up to first pour, that thing went like 4 or 5x where we had, something like that. I don't recall exactly. And guess what I did at first pour? I took profits, and then it looked like maybe this isn't going to be so profitable after all. And I dumped the rest of my shares. So I had like a 5x and a 3x on those. And that mine actually ended up failing. And yet I made 3 and 5x on the stock simply because I followed that formula. So I love that category as well. Sorry for going on so long here, Steve, but
No,
I get excited about
I
this
love it.
stuff.
I'm excited. Jeff, when you're looking at you gave four categories, in the early, the greenfield, the different parts of the Lassonde curve. I love kind of where your head's at with that. But do all those have something in common? Is there like a certain jurisdiction you wouldn't hit? I would love to kind of like get into your brain in terms of your playbook, in terms of how you assess companies. When you go to a website, is there something you look at first? I'd love to kind of know your thought process on how you evaluate, how you eliminate the wheat from the chaff, and kind of go from there.
Yeah, that's, I got that question a lot, and that's what ended up leading to me writing a book about it to answer that question, right? But here's a quick story. I had a friend who emailed me and said, "Did you see the drill intercept, the hit from XYZ company?" And I didn't know them. I looked it up, and wow, this is a pretty good, drill hit. But I wanted to know, okay, who's behind this and where is it? It was a Pearl Mining jurisdiction, which you always got to look for. But the CEO, and I've told this story before, but he was rewarding himself with a lot of stock, with a lot of shares that he didn't pay for. And he did it multiple times. And we're talking millions and millions of shares. And when I saw that, even though he put a little bit of his own money in, when I saw that, it was a complete non-starter for me. I refused to buy it. Now, the project may still do well, the stock may still do well, but what I'm focused on is reducing my risk. I don't want to invest in somebody who's doing that anyway, but I'm reducing my risk. And in the junior mining sector, one of the riskiest industries you can invest in, why don't we try to reduce our risk instead of adding to our risk? And that's why I did not buy that stock. So it starts with the people for me. And what they need to be is something very simple. And Keith Neumeyer at First Majestic Silver is the one who tagged this for me in the book. He said, "Look, I want to see a CEO or a geologist, whoever it is, who is, quote, at risk. I want them financially at risk so that they are going to do whatever they have to do to make this
Get it
company
done.
work, to make it successful, right?
Interesting.
Because they have to, because their wife's going to divorce him if they don't make this thing work because he's put too much money into it, right? So I
So
really
Keith
look for
Neumeyer likes
that."
it when so Keith Neumeyer likes it when people burn their boats. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Speaking of Keith Neumeyer, he gave me this silver coin, First Majestic silver coin.
Oh, is
Very
that
great
from
guy.
First Mint? Is that from their mint?
First Mint, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Very
Very great
cool.
guy.
I've known Keith for a long time. He's great. He's in the book. So, but anyway, I'm looking for people who are at risk. And if they're not, I'm sorry, it's a non-starter for me. I actually met with the CEO once at a conference, and he's trying to talk me into the stock, highlighting it and why it's a good pick and all that jazz. And so finally, I asked him some questions of, okay, well, how many shares do you own? How much money have you put into it? Oh, I haven't invested any of my money into it. No. I'm like, well, why do you expect me to buy your stock if you're not buying your own stock? Non-starter, I walked away from that, never even considered it. And by the way, that stock went nowhere over the next few years. It just completely did nothing. So that's a starting point for me. The second was the pro mining jurisdiction, like I mentioned, must be pro mining. Elon Musk can move his battery factory to Nevada, which he did. It's a couple hours from me. But you can't move the gold deposit. You can't pick it up and move it. So you need to be in countries that have a strong rule of law, that they protect property rights. So there, I'm looking at the, top 5 or 10 jurisdictions. Now, it doesn't mean I might not invest in one that's not in the top 10 jurisdictions, but I'm acknowledging the fact that I have increased my risk a little bit. But if the people there have worked there for decades and been successful, I like that. They know what they're doing. They have an in with the locals. They know how to work with the government, and if the project is strong, hey, I'll probably jump in. I probably won't recommend it in our free letter because we want those to be de-risked, but I just might chase it in the our paid letter.
Jeff, how important is share structure to you, the share history, and do you look at how much do you value which institutions are behind it?
Well, as far as institutions, yeah, it's great to see that they're invested too. Did they help with the financing, or did they just come in it separately and get behind it and invest it? Same with another producer. Have they invested in a small company? One of my favorite picks right now, there's like three silver companies that invested in them. Like what? Eric Sprott's put a lot of money into it. So those are, I do like that. As far as share structure, you do want to pay attention to it. There's a couple companies out there that I swear they might as well become Australian because they got over 1 billion shares outstanding. I mean, that, how do you expect the stock to move when you got 1 billion or 1.5 billion shares out? You could have good news, but you're gonna have to have an awful lot of buying to move that stock. So, eh. I'm looking for, the most prime strategic opportunity I can to invest in. And someone with that many shares out is not going to be a prime candidate.
So I've spoken to a lot of mining companies, and everyone presents differently in their presentations on their website, emphasizing different things. They talk about grade, or they talk about the size of the project, for instance. I hear some people say that grade is overrated, or I hear that
That
the
means they
size
don't
is
have
everything,
high
right?
grade, but
I've heard everything.
yeah, I bet.
But is there like something that you think is either overrated that people put too much emphasis on? And do you have any other red flags that you look for as you screen these bad companies out?
Well, when a company says we have district scale and all they own is a bunch of property, that's not district scale. A district scale project is one that has multiple discoveries. Okay, over several deposits. That's what's district scale, not just because you own a lot of land. So I would be careful with that phrase. It's commonly used, and they may have district scale land, but they don't have a district scale mine or operation or even potential. So I'd watch for that. Sorry, what was your other part of your question?
Just the red flags that you look for, anything that or things that are overrated, that people
That would
emphasize.
be something that's overrated. So the company that says, well, you don't really need high grade to make a mine, it usually means they don't have high grade. But on the other hand, that can be true. Again, we're looking at economics. There can be some high grade assets that aren't really economic because maybe the metallurgy is bad, or the putting together the engineering of it is not good, or too spread out, whatever. So high grade doesn't automatically make a mine. It's true that obviously high grade is easier to make a mine, but there are also many low grade bulk tonnage assets out there that can be just as economic or more than a high grade deposit. They're lower grade, but they're typically closer to surface. They're easier to process and cheaper to process. They're typically bigger, so you have a lot of volume. So those can easily make a mine sometimes. So I'm not necessarily looking at high grade or low grade. I'm back to that original question. Can this, or is this, or will this be an economic mine at some point? And again, that's a subjective question, or your answer is subjective, but get as much information as you can and focus on that very question. That's the number one question when you're investing in these juniors.
All right, Jeff, let's get into the juniors that you like. Love to get kind of get your a variety of different like gold, silver, even copper if you have them, but just what do you like? And as we go, I'd love to kind of ask you what you like about them if that's okay.
Absolutely. So I was just describing that silver company that had three silver, other silver companies that invested in it and Eric Sprott. And that company is Pacifica Silver. I know the CEO, Todd Anthony, very well. They got a project down in Mexico. Todd's actually in Paydirt. He was a very good source for me when I had picky little questions. Anyway, it's the Claudia project down in Mexico. They continue to have high grade silver hits over 1,000 gram meter silver equivalent every single time. Every single time they report news, they have, hits like that. In just today's press release, though, there was a little tidbit about there could be, they've identified some, they've used some geophysics and identified something that could be underneath all of this. Is this the feeder source, I'm wondering, for all the silver that they're, finding? It's got to come from somewhere. So I was very curious at that little statement, and I swear, if you don't own that stock, you might want to consider buying it. And actually, by the way, I'll be down there on site in July. I'm going on a analyst tour in July down to Mexico to visit. So by then, we'll probably see some core. Be able to see some core from the drilling that's underneath this other area. So could be very interesting. Of course, no guarantees. It, you know, who knows? It, you know, may not be the feeder source. We don't know, but it's very interesting, and I think it's a compelling buy at this point. So that's one. And then if you want a gold pick, oh my gosh, we have so many. Well, you mentioned uranium too. The one uranium pick that I like right now is a pre-discovery play. It's a little urgent that you might consider it because they are expecting drill results literally any day now. They are drilling in the Athabasca looking for high-grade uranium, and this team has made multiple uranium discoveries before in this very area. On top of that, the footprint, the geological footprint of this project is actually bigger than the footprint of the nearby Arrow deposit, which is a major discovery and will be a mine. Now, it doesn't guarantee they're going to make a discovery or that it's bigger than Arrow, but it's awfully compelling. This is a pre-discovery play, so it's very speculative, but assay results, the first batch are expected at any time, so you might consider a tranche of that at this point.
What's the name of the company, Jeff?
Oh, I didn't say that. Stallion Uranium.
Stallion Uranium. Okay.
And
And
then for a gold pick, oh, I'm sorry, what?
what's your gold pick?
For gold, there's.
Before gold, do you have any copper plays you like?
I do. I really like Vizsla Copper. It's a Craig Perry company. They have an asset in BC, and then they acquired an Alaska asset from American Pacific Mining. Very prospective land for both of those projects. There's already a resource on the BC one. But what tipped me over the edge to buy this was, again, going back to the people. Craig Perry has created multiple billion-dollar companies. Full stop right there. I mean, this is the kind of person you want to invest in who has very compelling projects, more than one, in pro mining jurisdictions, who's created significant shareholder value in the past. And I bought that stock in the open market, and then they had a financing last year, and I invested in that private placement as well. So I'm very overweight that stock, but I'm overweight all of these ones that I'm giving you. So full disclosure, I own them all, but I own them for the reasons that I'm listing.
Jeff, let's do your gold plays.
There's many. You can get a lot of free ones on our site, but one that's very compelling to me right now that has not run up yet. That's the thing I'm looking for. A lot of stocks have run up. Some have not corrected much. This one is very attractively priced right now, and that's A2 Gold. And again, it starts with the people that, well, they have a gold project in Nevada with a resource that they think, like I mentioned previously, they can double or triple that resource. If they do that, that's going to be a very attractive buyout candidate because it's in Nevada. That's what they're going to, a lot of majors will look for, right? But again, what started with me is the person behind it who's actually behind the scenes, but I respect what he has done, and he's created, again, major shareholder value in the past. His companies have either gone 10x or they've been bought out at a profit. And I think A2 Gold could be one of the next ones. So that this again is an overweight position for me. It's attractively priced right now, aggressively drilling, so lots of catalysts ahead. So I'm in full bore in that one.
Jeff, the Gold Advisor, can you tell us a little bit more about that? And then I'd like to ask you about your Pay Dirt book afterwards, but tell us about the Gold
Sure.
Advisor a little bit more and just kind of how people can benefit from your services and just even the hints that you gave. If you can kind of tell us what kind of companies and how people can learn about your service.
Yes. Well, how would you like to get a mining stock newsletter with stock picks in it that's fully monitored? Every time there's news, we file updates. There's stocks we personally have bought, and we give our recommendations and anything you want to know basically on the stock. How would you like to get a newsletter like that for free? That's what the Gold Advisor newsletter is. We also have one that focuses just on silver, Silver Advisor newsletter. So we have two free newsletters that are basically just like a paid newsletter, except they're for free. Now, they do support the site financially. They're technically advertisers, I think we call them. But these companies are highly screened. We do get hit up a lot from companies that want to do that, just pay a fee and get on. We don't do it like that. It has to be a stock that passes all the criteria in the book, and also has to be a stock we own or would buy after we recommend it. You do get first crack if we don't own it. So you can get all that for free. There's like 20 stocks in each of those portfolios, and they're all ones we own and track. And then we do have paid newsletters, and this is where we go down the food chain a little bit, down the ladder with the juniors. And so these are a little bit higher risk, but potentially higher reward. So a good example is A2 Gold has a resource. They've been de-risked essentially, so they're in the free letter. Stallion Uranium I gave you is a pre-discovery play, and with higher risk but higher potential reward. That's in our paid letter, Paydirt Prospector. It's called named after the book. So we have that. We also have a premium letter we just released this morning. A private placement to people interested in that. You do have to be high net worth for that. But if you are, you might consider it. This just came out today. And I will tell you that I liked this one so much that I invested an overweight amount of money for me into this private placement. In fact, it's one of my largest investments in 2026 year to date. So I really like it a lot. I can't give you the name out of respect to paying subscribers, but it's there if you're interested. We also have a geologist on staff now, Steve. We're expanding with her. We're considering starting another newsletter because we want to make sure we don't miss other opportunities in the commodity sector beyond just gold, silver, copper, and uranium, as we talked about. So we're doing that. We have full-time marketing manager, full-time admin. We have a dedicated analyst on each of our newsletters. So We're growing like crazy, and I will tell you that I am viewing this correction as a buying opportunity. This sell-off is a buying opportunity. I said in a video the other day, I love big dips and I cannot lie, and I'm taking advantage of it. So I'm in.
Jeff, what's your paid dirt about?
Yeah, the book Pay Dirt. I kept getting that question, like I mentioned earlier, about, how did you pick this one? Why not that one? So the idea of writing a book came up. And one of my good friends, with Mike Maloney, if you know that name, he, bullion dealer,
Yeah.
his video guy, his production guy, said, Jeff, you need to write a book. And here's the title, Pay Dirt. I thought, that's a great title, but I'm too busy. So, and then COVID hit, right? So I lost my excuse to being too busy. So started writing, took about 2.5 years off and on, hired an editor, went back and interviewed 17 other people. They're in the book as well, like I mentioned. So I tried to keep it entertaining. In fact, you can read a free chapter on the website, The Scariest Mind I've Ever Been In. And if you're claustrophobic, well, you've been warned. So you could check that chapter out and see if it's for you. But it's basically my method, what I've used to be successful before.
Yeah.
All, I put it all into this book, and along with the advice of all these other people. So it's chock full of advice. It's entertaining. It's not a long read. And it's, in my opinion, it's not expensive. So you can get a PDF copy on the website, or you can click the link to get it from Amazon or any other, get a paperback from Amazon and other sources.
Great. Well, Jeff, for our listeners, I myself, have traded in and out of some of these stocks, but I'm not giving investment advice. I know that Jeff, you are heavily involved in the ones you've gave, and thank you so much for sharing that. Everybody, thegoldadvisor.com. Check out Jeff's website. I'll link his socials and website on the show notes. Jeff, thanks for being here, and everyone, thanks for listening. I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from great people like Jeff Clark. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Steve. Let's do it again sometime.
I'm going to read your book first and then we can do it. But
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thank you.
all right. Thanks so much, Jeff. Appreciate you.
Thank you.